Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly movie podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor and chief critic, joined as always by Ann Thompson, our editor at large. And we've got tons of stuff to talk about, some upcoming festival news, some major awards updates. But first, let's talk about how I'm not going to gloat on this podcast.
Yeah. I set myself up.
Last week, we recorded at the end of Cannes, and the Palme d'Or ceremony hadn't happened yet. And I believe you said, maybe I'll sound like an idiot later, but how can you say Titan is going to win the Palme d'Or? And you know, look what happened.
So it's Titan.
Oops, I gloated. I'm sorry.
It's Titan.
You could be right about one thing.
No, here's what I was basically saying. French, I was saying that it was unlikely that a jury, in even this jury, would take such an outrageous, extraordinary film, which was, by the way, the best film I saw at Cannes. I agree with you about what a great movie it is, along with The Farhadi, A Hero, which did get another prize. It had to share a prize. So those are two of the movies that came out of Cannes that are going to go on to become big deals in the, you know, and most of the Cannes movies end up being foreign language entries anyway. So maybe Japan will go for Drive My Car, or maybe, you know, we'll see Norway submit The Worst Person in the World, whose actress won the Palme d'Or for Best Actress. So you know, there was a lot of shared love. Memoria shared another prize. You know, there's a lot. And Caleb Landry Jones winning Best Actor for a movie that screened at the very end of the festival. And I don't think it even still has distribution, Nitram. Yeah. From Justin
Kurzel.
Well,
it's a tough one because it's a shooter. It's about an Australian shooter that, you know, sort of whose act stimulated anti-gun laws in the country. But it is a really astounding and disturbing performance. So it does kind of make sense. I mean, I think a lot of us probably assumed Simon Rex from Red Rocket had that one in the bag.
I did not think they would do that. For the same reason I didn't think they would go with Titan. It has to do with what is presentable and appropriate. And they went against that. I was proud of them.
I think it wasn't, I mean, obviously, I was less surprised, right? And it wasn't just pure wishful thinking. I actually think what you said at the start is crucial. It was your favorite movie of the festival. It was my favorite movie of the festival.
It was everybody we polled at IndieWire's favorite movie.
Yeah, we polled 30-odd critics voted.
And the directing, too. They went for both.
Bonkers for this movie. And even if they didn't like it, they admitted that it had this vision on display. I saw almost all the movies in competition. I saw a lot of good stuff. A lot of the movies you mentioned I thought were very good. But when you talk about a movie that's a Palme movie, right, the same way we talk about, is this a competition film? Like this curatorial kind of process of going through these films and looking at quality one film after the next, this was the movie that I thought hit that sweet spot of being both visionary, very satisfying to a wide range of people, and also just it felt like a good movie to salute. Like we want to celebrate that kind of cinema, that kind of.
I would have thought they would give her, you know. Also, let's be honest. Cannes has not been handing out a lot of awards to women over the years. This is only the second time that a woman has won the Palme d'Or as
a director.
As a director.
Yeah.
And Jane Campion
shared the award with another filmmaker the year she won. So this is a
it isn't out of line for me to think, oh God, they're going to give the woman screenplay or directing or something like Grand Prix or something like that, jury prize. But they didn't. They went for the big one, and I'm very proud of them for doing it. Poor Spike, of course, had his moment of blundering. I really think his issue had to do with not understanding French.
Well, I mean, I was watching this back at home with my VPN in Queens, and watching it was so funny because, you know, obviously there was a voiceover for anytime someone spoke English, and he wasn't wearing the headset, so it was
the
French was just coming at him. I would be surprised if they did a dry run for that beforehand. I don't think he had
a rehearsal, because he clearly didn't know what the agenda was. I said at the time, somebody didn't brief Spike. They should have really made, if they were giving him a piece of paper and making sure that he introduced each of the categories, they clearly didn't make it clear to him. And he was like, so she said, what's the first prize? And she meant, what is the first one coming up that you're giving out, your jury's giving out? And he went, oh, I know what the first prize is. And he gives away the whole thing.
He's like standing there awkwardly, like facing Melanie.
He was so embarrassed.
But I have to say, I mean, one, he reacted well to it, all things considered. I think he played it for laughs. He may have been very embarrassed. But also, it was actually great TV. I mean, I found it really entertaining.
It was very real.
When he came back and he was like, I believe in second chances, and he was about to do it again. Not yet. We're going to bring out Sharon Stone to introduce the prize, because she was around doing the Amphar Gala the night beforehand.
So they do better when they, you know, they pull in the Jodie Fosters and the Oliver Stone. You know, Oliver Stone's mom was French, so he actually speaks fluent French also. So unfortunately, Spike is not a fluent French speaker, but if the jury reactions were hilarious, you know, Melanie Laurent was freaking out.
But then Julia Ducournau, who came up, said, you know, tonight was, I think she said something like, it was perfect because it wasn't perfect or something like that. I mean, just like embrace the messiness of all of this stuff. I thought it made a ceremony that often is maybe a little too formal more entertaining. So
she also made some very strong statements at the event and at the jury press conference about and to you directly about not wanting to be just a woman director. And one of the things that she got very emotional at the jury press conference when Didier Allouche asked her about did she feel free when she was making this film and as a filmmaker, and she got very upset and said, you know, she has to fight every single day to get what she wants on the screen. And what's great about that movie is, you know, she was in control of every moment of that script and direction. It's very controlled.
People love a good discovery. She is a discovery. I mean, you know, a lot of us saw Raw and thought this was a filmmaker with an incredible vision, using body horror in a more exciting way than we've seen.
Very Cronenbergian.
Yeah, it's like Cronenberg, but in a different kind of context, in a way, and even a more like emotionally resonant and thematically timely way that I think really elevates the work that she's doing. And you got to hand it to Neon. They had the Bong Joon-ho film Parasite winning
two
a
years
Palm
ago. In effect is a follow-up,
right? So they bought the North American rights for this movie, not knowing that obviously that this was going to happen, but that kind of calculated risk does seem to be paying off. And
they have excellent taste. They had Memoria as well. And they also bought during the festival, right before they bought The Worst Person in the World, which was up for grabs, and a lot of different distributors were kicking the wheels on that one.
Yeah, but let's look at Titane, which in English, I believe, is Titanium.
That's right.
Also, you could call it Titan, because she said that she was sort of inspired by the Greek mythology of the birth of the Titans. So they have some options there if they want to play around with that. But I know this is a tough sell as a French Oscar submission, but let's not completely rule it out as an awards movie, because it has an impact on people.
Part of why that is that I have a sense of how these awards givers think, and I definitely have a sense of how the Academy Awards givers think. It'll be up to France. France will make the decision of what to submit. They could submit something like Paris District 13 from Odiard,
Ozone's new film,
something else. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, they could go more conventional Oscar-y way, which was what happened with Les Miserables getting it over Portrait of a Lady on Fire, because they were right, it did get nominated. I mean, that doesn't mean Portrait wouldn't.
That's
have,
a big deal, but, getting nominated.
But I also think that again, people are going to be, the more people that see this movie are going to be excited to talk about it. Spike Lee said in the press conference it had a little bit of genius and a little bit of crazy, and that's like what filmmaking is all about. I'm paraphrasing, but it's worth seeing that.
And he's right.
There will
and
be
he's right.
more advocates it's, for this film.
Here's where it's going to go. It's going to have... But here's the thing, Eric. I mean, I could be wrong again, but it's not Parasite. And remember that Parasite was
well, that was
this a, is a genre film too.
Yeah, it but, is.
And it's outrageous in a certain kind of way.
And it's fun to talk about it, and we both liked it.
We loved it. And it'll be on my 10 best list, and the critics are going to support it, and it's going to win prizes from the critics. That I can see. The question is whether France, in its wisdom, and they don't always do the right thing, whether France will submit it.
And then you also have, just to put it out there, two really remarkable performances. One from this newcomer, Agatha Roussel. I don't know if I'm saying her name correctly, who was cast off of Instagram based on her androgynous looks. Really incredible performance that apparently she spent a year preparing for. And the great, Vincent Lindon, who's like completely against type. He's a major actor in France. I mean, that could be a supporting actor play.
He's from Belgium, and he's an incredible actor.
Yeah.
And he won the best actor at Cannes a few years ago for Measure of a Man. And what's great about this is what the director was able to get out of him. And he said it completely changed his view of acting.
Yeah,
working with her. So, Julia Ducournau, keep your eyes peeled. Let's see what happens with her. Yeah.
I don't think she should make a Marvel movie, but we'll see what happens as her
star
expands. So let's talk about other stuff going on. One of the things that I think was most striking about our Cannes experience is that in spite of having no saliva left to give because of all the spitting that we had to do, we felt pretty comfortable overall with the Cannes experience. We felt safe going to Europe.
It was reassuring in a way, because you had to have a vaccination to get into Europe and you had to get a vaccination to get back into the United States. And and when you were at Cannes, if you were American, the vaccination was irrelevant. But if some places did demand it. There were some parties that demanded it. And then you had to keep it on hand just in case. And then you had the testing every 2 days, which again was reassuring. I didn't feel at all, ever, in any danger when I was at Cannes.
Me neither. And
you now I'm home, and everything is spiking, and Canada is opening up on the one hand while, making Toronto a possibility, and then the American side is saying you can't get back in.
Hang on, though. Before you get into all that, what I was just going to say is you could even argue that we were safer in a controlled environment like Cannes, in spite of the scale of people at that event, than you might be in certain places.
In your local supermarket.
Yeah, exactly.
But my attitude is wearing a mask indoors is the answer, and you had to wear a mask indoors in Cannes, too. You did.
Yep.
In a theater. We were never in the theater without a mask.
Yeah, you had to, and if you weren't, then someone might tell you to put it on. So, yet we come back to the U.S. and we see all kinds of issues coming up now. This past week, the spike of daily deaths in Nevada has thrown a real shadow over the possibility of CinemaCon being a destination for a lot of people. I know you were.
I was going to go to CinemaCon. I think it's one of the most interesting CinemaCons ever to attend. There's so much going on with the theaters, and I wanted to get on the ground and talk to people. And the studios were going to do their show and tells. A lot of them last year lost an enormous amount of money because they had prepared all of those sizzle reels, and then they didn't go. So I think they're going through the same thing again. I'm really curious to see if it actually goes forward. And you have things like Patrick Corcoran and John Fithian, releasing this NATO statement about Black Widow and how they lost money by having it be day and date on Disney Plus and so forth with a premium price. And it was really, a lot of people reacted badly to that memo because it was sort of oversimplifying reality.
Yeah, I mean, there may have been a kernel of truth to it, but it's certainly a debate that could have had more substance if it wasn't just a bunch of like everybody just from one side decides to look
it's
at a
propaganda. Release. Everything yeah, is propaganda.
Yeah, exactly. We're not seeing like
it's politics, really.
Yeah, it's and the truth is, I mean, I quite enjoyed Black Widow for what it is. I do think like the lack of success around this movie raises a lot of bigger questions aside from day and date. Like, what even is an event movie these days? What does it really take for people to go see a movie they can watch at home or anything else?
But it's also, you know, COVID is out there, you know, so there are a lot of people who haven't returned to theaters yet and a lot of adult moviegoers. I loved Black Widow. I thought it was really well done and I enjoyed it. I don't, you know, it was one of my, you know, absolutely favorite Marvel movies. I'm in long overdue. I thought Florence Pugh and Scarlett Johansson were both fantastic in it, along with their parents, you know, Harbour and Rachel Weisz. But you know, whatever. It didn't perform partly because I think people were uncomfortable going back to theaters.
So we'll see how that argument plays out. And then in the meantime, speaking of theaters and things not going as planned, today, as we're recording, we found out that in the UK, the theatrical release of The Green Knight was pulled, with the Delta variant obviously being a major concern, although it wasn't specifically cited why. There is now some speculation that there could be more delayed.
So we're going back into the trenches again, where people are questioning what's safe and whether I'm still going to go to theaters. I have no issues. I have some screenings. I'm going to show up. I'm just going to wear a mask.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was in New York, I was running around on the subway and I was, you know, all over the place.
We went to events.
Went out to dinner.
I was in a press screening last night and I almost like was taken aback when I walked in. I'd gotten so used to going to press screenings where it'd be like maybe one or two people spaced out, and there were like 12 to 15 people in the screening room. Everyone was wearing a mask and stuff, but it was definitely like one of those things that you notice now. So you're aware of it. And the question is it okay to be in these situations? Well, we feel safe doing it for now, but in different parts of the world, there are different kinds of concerns to take into account.
Los Angeles is going south right now. It's not a good thing where it's going. It's not back to where it was in the horrible spike period, but surge period. But it's the numbers are, you know, heading up.
Well, be careful out there.
So we're just being vigilant.
Let's turn to Toronto, which you touched on earlier. So Toronto's been making a series of announcements. First of all, just to acknowledge their situation. So Canada, I believe, is going to allow vaccinated travelers in from other countries starting in early September. This announcement reminds me of the turning point with Cannes, when Macron basically created a program for allowing vaccinated Americans in. And there was this sense, okay, Cannes is now feasible. When we were at Cannes, the conversation around Toronto was sort of like, well, how are they going to pull this off as anything different from what it was last year? Obviously, they still would like to have a bigger footprint than what it was last year, to invite more people in.
They've said that we are welcome, but unfortunately, the United States is saying that we are not welcome back if we go.
Right. So we have to wait and see how that's going to play out. But Toronto definitely does seem to be doing its best to rev its engines with a series of announcements that message it being more than just a local festival with an online component. They have a tribute. They are going to do a big thing around Dune. They're going to honor Denis Villeneuve. So that's worth
it. So that's part of the Oscar push for Dune. And the other, of course, it's debuting in Venice. And the other
thing, in IMAX.
And in IMAX, it'll be in IMAX in Toronto. And they're also honoring a French-Canadian, one of their own, someone who's been very loyal, brought his films to the festival over the years. So that all makes sense. And it's not a big deal for him to be there. And then they've got an opening night movie, Dear Evan Hansen. They've got Zhang Yimou's 1 Second. They've got Searchlight's Eyes of Tammy Faye with Jessica Chastain and Andrew Garfield, which I'm looking forward to. Michael Showalter directed that.
We've been hearing about for a while. I'm certainly curious about Dear Evan Hansen. I saw it on Broadway. It's a tearjerker. I could see that playing well. And the Zhang Yimou film One Second was originally supposed to premiere in Berlin last year, and then at the last big festival we went to before COVID, and then I believe it was pulled because of quote unquote technical difficulties, which people thought were related to censorship from the Chinese government. So somehow that was sorted, and Neon recently picked it up from North America. So I'm curious to see what kind of a life it has, but it sounds
sometimes Zhang Yimou is the big is the real deal.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a good story. It's
but why wasn't that at Cannes, for example?
Well, it was in the Berlin lineup.
No, they don't run Berlin. Yeah, that's why.
So there's
I'm
sure that it's something like that. So yeah, but
so New York is coming too. This is exciting. We've got the tragedy of Macbeth, the Coen brothers, not the Coen brothers, the Coen brother, Joel Coen alone.
He's flying solo on this one, although he's not exactly flying solo.
Francis McDormand.
Yeah, him and his wife have been cooking up this one for a while. Apparently, it's a real passion project. Which the P word in this case can be a bit freaky, I suppose, for some people. Like, is the passion project a good thing or not? But this one, I mean, A24 has got it. It's Francis McDormand and Denzel. I mean, it's beautiful
black with Amazon, though, right? Amazon's involved.
Well, it is an A24 film. So I think, you know, on some level, they're really getting behind this one. It was one of the ones that Scott Rudin took his name off that has been cooking up for a while. We know that it was shooting, you know, during the shutdowns and stuff, and that it's at a certain point they were able to restart. So,
and it's one of a series of black and white films coming up this year.
That is also
which we will see many,
good big screen
many
experience.
Of them.
And here in New York, so that'll be the opening night on Alice Tully Hall, which will reopen to the public in early September with a whole bunch of stuff. The Philharmonic will be there and all that stuff. So you can expect, unless something really scary happens, and who knows, knock on wood, that this would be a big sort of return to form for New York Film Festival with the Tavern on the Green opening night, which we always call Film Prom. And
we
already know that French Dispatch is going to be there, so that'll be a big thing, a big show, and probably a couple other major movies. I mean, you can assume that some of these Netflix titles, like maybe the Jane Campion film, will find a home in the fall circuit. We still don't know what Telluride looks like. We know that Telluride is requiring vaccinations, so they've got their own.
I filled out my paperwork.
Yeah, but we are planning to go, and it does seem like the more you talk to people, the more the sense is that in spite of not being able to happen last year, Telluride will be
it's going to have a lot. I feel very bad for Toronto, because even if they have some things, I think Telluride is going to be the juicy play this year.
Well, here's what I would say about
the fluke of this COVID surge that keeps hitting. Part of it is Canada has their own political issues in Ontario, where they just didn't control the virus as well, and where the vaccinations came in very late.
Yeah, well, and they seem to have turned that around somewhat. At least that's what they're messaging with their opening up to more people. But exactly how that affects whether or not people can come in is still a real question. I mean, even in Cannes, you know, the Asia contingency, which is usually one of the biggest, couldn't really be there.
No,
so
they weren't there.
The thing I will say about Toronto, and what I always appreciate about it, is, you know, by the time I go to Toronto, you and I, we track a lot of these bigger fall titles, and we get to see a lot of them by going to Telluride or by seeing things early through different kinds of channels. I spend a lot of time looking at other aspects of Toronto, and I think it doesn't get acknowledged enough that Toronto programs much more than big fall movies. They have that discovery section. They have the platform section. I don't know exactly how all of that is shaking down with the lower volume of films, but it's more than they had last year. And they really do program more than just high profile Oscar films. I'm not saying that's a case for, you know, making a big noise, but
anything, though, if you're looking at it from the point of view of Oscars, Telluride has more of them.
Telluride will have more of an
Oscar
impact
in recent years.
My hope is that the Toronto lineup, even if whether or not we're on the ground, that it will offer a bunch of films that are worth talking about and could easily be ignored if the festival didn't program them, because they're not obvious Oscar films.
No. We'll just have to watch them from home like we did last time, which is unfortunate. I hope we get to go. But if we don't, that's an option.
Well, you can come over and we'll have a screening party, and then you can stick around until New York Film Festival a week or so later. We'll make a show of it one way or another. But we haven't, speaking of Oscar season, we haven't talked about another big development, which is the Spirit Awards, which moved way up to March 6th.
Three weeks ahead of the show. So usually, as everybody knows, it's Saturday before the Oscars. It's a tent out in Santa Monica. It's in the daytime. There's this long, wonderful cocktail hour where everyone hangs out and sees each other. And so there's a part of me that's mourning the loss of that, because what they're going to do instead, and they're smart. I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. They're smart to take advantage of the void left by the Golden Globes, and as the Critics' Choice are also doing, jump in, have more of an impact on the Oscar race, let the indies shine, and make a stand for a bigger show earlier in the season. It makes perfect sense.
So I guess what I'm curious to see with all of this is, you know, that we still don't really know what will fill the void that the Golden Globes, if the Golden Globes don't, you know, somehow make some dramatic comeback, and that doesn't seem to be in the cards.
It's looking like they're going to be dead, is my, because they're not fixing it yet. They are still stepping on their own feet and stumbling at every turn.
Yeah. So I guess the real question then is, it's like, obviously, the Spirit Awards are jockeying for a more prominent position. They're not going to generate the kind of ratings that the Globes did.
No, these things grow over time, you know. So it's a very they should grab this, and they should grab it aggressively and really make it work if they can. I mean, in both cases of the Critics' Choice and the Indie Spirits, those shows are lower budget, not as starry, you know, they're not as well produced as Dick Clark does with the Golden Globes, honestly. No, so they need to step up to a higher level of delivery there.
Yeah. I mean, look, I love throwing a good party. We did a good one in Cannes, but I realize that if you want to sort of appeal to the masses, you got to really invest in looking like a fancy show. And I've always felt like the Spirit Awards feel like an extension of the kind of parties I like to throw. I mean, it's like you're hanging out with all your peers in a very sort of holistic fashion. But I don't know. I mean, there were a number of years there where the Spirit Awards had this problem of being too conflated with the Oscars at the expense of films.
Well, they
kind of
changed that.
Yeah,
in the last few years.
They have fixed it, I think, in a way that's positive, by putting a budget cap of $20 million and by just the nominating committees just being, you know, acknowledging the fact that you can cast a wider lens than the Oscars
But this way, they might actually have, you know, some of the winners could actually, you know, they could, especially the winners, would have an impact on Oscar voting. And I love that. I think that's great.
I mean,
I'm sorry they're doing it at night. I wish it was not just another nighttime award show. I wish they could recreate some of the vibe from
the
beach.
Yeah, we love partying on the beach. And that's losing that feels like something, but hopefully it'll still be a good party and we'll be able to sort of experience some aspect of that. I mean, I always enjoy not just that, but also just seeing the crowd. It feels like the whole community comes out for this.
That's what it is. Yeah.
And that's almost like going to like a film festival party. It's like every film festival party rolled into one or something. You need that. You need that to catch up with people, to get a sense of how people are feeling about things. So that some of that's going to have to be replicated one way or another. And we'll see how things play out. I guess Titane won't be part of the conversation there because it's a non-American film. But there could be some other Cannes films that do surface there. I'm very excited to see Red Rocket reintroduced to the conversation in a couple months. I can't wait to talk about that movie with more people. It's unfortunate that it didn't win anything, because that would have been probably the number two on my list after Titane. Really, really incredible piece of filmmaking. So that's one that could circle back. So next week, and we'll figure out what else is going on in the world. There's obviously much that's developing. We have new films
coming
out.
There's some screenings. There's some new movies being shown. I was a little annoyed. A little annoyed at some of the reaction to early footage of Dune, right? And the big trailer for Dune dropped. And there's all this discussion. Is Dune commercial? Is Dune going to make its money back and everything? And I'm like, wait until you see the movie. We looked at Avatar when it was early on.
And a lot of people just dumped on it.
You know, that turned into the biggest movie of all time.
To be fair, Avatar looked pretty damn silly when you didn't get the full picture.
Well, apparently people aren't buying some of the early footage on Dune either. It looks fantastic to me.
I think, well, also, I mean, I have two different brains here. Like, one is the practical minded one and one is the aesthetic one. On the creative side of things, I mean, I love Blade Runner 2049, but on the practical side, you realize that sometimes, you know, a very ambitious arty approach to making a blockbuster doesn't translate. So people are saying, oh, it's not a commercial movie. Well, it probably is a tough sell one way or another. It's long and it's a source.
It looks really action packed. And it looks like they're really leaning on Timothée Chalamet for their and Zendaya as their entryways.
And clearly
I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Clearly based on the memification of the suit he wore on the Cannes red carpet for French Dispatch,
he definitely has some pull.
Put Timmy in everything and you're basically good to go. Done deal. So anyway,
okay.
And we're back. We're catching up on sleep. I hope you get a chance to, you know, figure out your surroundings again, but also to you know, rest easy in spite of everything that still is going on in the world that's so unpredictable, because we've been working hard and we need to take a breather. So I'll see you soon, refreshed and all that stuff.
Bye-bye, Eric.